Hey, Robert.
So who are you?
My name's Dean. I'm the general manager of the Internet Explorer team. And I want to talk to you a little bit about the Beta 2 preview.
Dang.
Just went legally live as compared to illegally or unofficially or leakagely.
Legally. Is that a new word?
Leakagely. It's a very...
When you're a general manager, you get to invent words, right?
Right. So, you know, there are a couple of things. We called it a Beta 2 preview.
Yeah.
Because it's not Beta 2. It's a Beta 2 preview.
Okay.
It takes a very large number of people and constituencies to make the internet work. You know, domain registrars, website operators, network operators. There are a bunch of folks out there. When we actually put the Beta 2 preview out, the real consumer Beta 2 preview out, we want the internet to really work and be well. Yep. I figured the right way to do that is to put out a Beta 2 preview intended for a more technical audience so that developers can make sure that all the code that they've written works. And website operators can do the same thing. And, you know, the guys who run wireless access in hotels can make sure that their security certificates are you know, tidy and neat and all precise. And what I want to do is I grabbed four people off the team.
Okay.
And rather than just have me go on and on and on and on.
They're here in this room?
Stuff, yeah.
Take it?
So we've got Bruce.
Hi,
people just introduced themselves. Go ahead.
Yeah. Who are you?
Bruce Morgan. I'm the dev manager for the user experience and RSS teams.
And we know you from the IE blog, right?
Oh, yeah.
And
on
Channel 9, yeah. Yeah.
Chris Wilson. I'm the group program manager for the platform and security in IE.
And you're the guy who deals with all the standards.
And I am the guy who deals with a lot of the standards.
What's your 10-word bio?
I'm going to spend the next 10 years of my life making up for the last 10.
Cool.
Hi, I'm Sean Lindersay. I'm lead program manager for RSS.
Excellent.
And that's what I do.
Yeah, Team RSS, go.
I'm Venkat Kudler, development lead for networking and navigation, the IE team.
Excellent.
So, you know, of all the things that we've done that are going to be live in Beta 2 preview, I just figured we could just go around and, you know, my version of this is I'm just going to say one thing that I really like and what it is, why I like it. Maybe we can just go around and, you know, at very
first. Is there anything new that we haven't seen yet?
Well, it depends if you downloaded the leak or not. If you downloaded the leak, right?
We don't download leaks.
You don't download, okay.
No, we're nice people.
You don't know, you know, wares have all sorts of, you know, crazy things that go in them. Since the,
what was the last official version that you guys put out? It was the CTP.
It was December
5270.
5270
with Windows Vista.
That had it didn't have our new Beta 2 UI.
Your face is all white because my camera just doesn't like that sun for some reason. But I'm sorry.
So it's the
speak to the camera.
It's the 5270 didn't have what we referred to as the big frame changes,
okay,
where we did the number one feedback, which was to move the menu bar back where it should be and tabs down against the page.
Woo!
So that's the big change that everybody should see in the UX.
Okay.
And over 5270, we also have just a lot of polish around. Things went to their final places. Favorite center got better. Tab row got better. Address bar got better. I can't recall if 5270 had the we ununified the stop go refresh into a stop button and a go refresh.
Now, I've heard that this is feature complete at this point. Is that true or not?
We have all the functionality. We don't have all the final user interface. We don't have all the final fit and finish. Again, that's why it's a preview. I think all the functionality is exposed in some way, right?
Okay.
So people can go through and experiment with it. It's not the final UI. It's not the final experience that I expect consumers will want.
Right.
But if we're going to go around and basically say what's in there, I think that my favorite feature about the Beta 2 previews that we're shipping it. Bruce mentioned a
everybody's excited about that? No excitement in this room.
Bruce mentioned much of the UX stuff, but I think
these guys have been up
around
all night, haven't they?
We've been very late nights.
You haven't had your coffee in the morning yet, have you?
Right,
we have.
So
you have.
We
have. All right, help me
cut.
This is after the coffee.
Look, so my favorite feature is that we're shipping it. Bruce mentioned a bunch of the UX stuff. We should go around and basically talk about the stuff that people will be able to try out. Developers, site operators, web developers will be able to try out that they couldn't try out before. So why don't we just go around? You've got a bunch of the CSS stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we've done a lot of CSS work. We put in the overflow fix, which was huge, just fixing our model for overflow and the box model in general, and CSS, which was a really big item. I actually wasn't expecting we would get it done that quickly, so it was great to see. Lots of security features, nothing really new there, except the ActiveX opt-in is a lot cleaner than it was.
ActiveX opt-in, I think, is huge.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, huge. In terms of security.
I mean,
securing default users, it's huge.
Yeah, we should subscribe to RSS. We can do multiple laps. He's got at least four more minutes of tape left.
Oh, yeah.
So let's go to Team RSS guy.
So my favorite feature is we actually locked down the RSS icon after a long time. So that's my favorite feature.
It's orange, right?
It's good job. Orange and it's square. Which is
and you actually worked with a competitor.
Yeah, we went over in November, September, and went down and talked to Mozilla, and we're using their icon because, you know, it's orange. It's a good icon. What can we say?
Yep.
So that's what, good. I think in the
what was like that like? I mean, I'd love to be in on some of these meetings where the IE team meets the Mozilla team.
Well, you know, after we thumb wrestled them, you know, that's basically they won the thumb wrestling, and so they said, okay, we'll go with you. What happened. No, I mean, it's just casual. I mean, we all basically do the same thing. We build browsers, right?
Yeah.
We live the same world. So it's it was just a casual conversation, you know, no bribes, nothing else. Just talking.
No friendly bets, yeah.
No.
So networking. I mean, IDN, I think, is huge. Unified URL parsing.
And there's a trust badge that puts out more information about the URL that you're going to, the data that you're downloading. We've streamlined the SSL experience a fair bit, so no more of those pesky dialogues. We tell you what we think, and then you have the option to continue on.
Are you in charge of the anti-phishing features? And
also, yes.
Okay, because that's actually my favorite feature. Is now, when IE7 comes out, my mom is going to be protected from getting taken off to weird places.
Yes,
and how is that feature working today in the current builds?
It's working, you know, it's done. It's
really pretty solid now. I mean, even for months, you know, it actually does pop up every once in a while when I click on spam mail, and, you know, just to check and see if it's protecting.
Yeah, I'm happy to get the mail in my inbox. I say, ooh, I'm going to check out the anti-phishing feature, and it's got them all.
So you think basically IE7 makes junk mail fun again? Because you're willing to go on those
exactly.
links just to see.
I click the link.
Who got sucked?
Click those links. I want to see what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I don't do it on
we
my wife's computer, but
of the marketing person.
You're going off the framework. It's not part of the messaging.
This is the first time I've had the marketing police in the room. Who are you now that you got pulled into this conversation?
I'm Margaret Cobb, and I'm the product marketing manager. And I have the Channel 9 IE7 video up there, the podcast.
Yep.
So they've seen me before.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to keep these guys on point.
This is an uncontrolled. I hang around with these guys sometimes, and they're in control. This is very laid back, you know.
The idea here is not to tell people to go out and click on every spam mail, right?
Right.
Okay. Okay.
Don't do this at home,
just
kids.
Just
exactly.
Protect you if you do.
But
yeah.
If you did,
you'd still be protected.
Right. For users who choose to click on links that they get in junk mail,
we'll
be able to tell you that it's probably not really PayPal.
Are we
probably not really eBay.
In this build, are we going to get a good sense of performance yet? Because previous builds are
performance is okay. There's still a bunch more performance. Guys, I went to get my coffee this morning. I ran into a bunch of guys on the team who were heading over to another building to talk to the performance gods. And they had some very interesting count of the number of registry hits when the anti-phishing filter gets invoked in certain scenarios. So I expect to see some performance gains.
Yeah.
I expect Venkat to turn a deeper shade of red the next time I bring up this.
Yeah.
let's go back to RSS, the platform.
Sure. Oh,
The platform. So
that's actually a new thing. In the last time we had an XP release was a long time ago, and there was no platform. And now we have a platform, and we had a platform on Vista, and now we have a platform on XP as well. So the platform being shipped on XP is actually completely brand new to this release. And what the platform lets developers do is basically they have access to the feed list, every feed that the user subscribes to, as well as the content. They can basically leverage the download engine that we built, all the security stuff that we built into the engine. They don't have to. In fact, a developer can consume RSS without even knowing an angle bracket.
Yeah.
Right? They can just consume RSS and basically subscribe to anything on the web.
You guys have three really good verbs. There's like normalize.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
NVS.
You should explain NVS because this is really cool. Like just in terms of letting somebody just go and like pound on some RSS stuff.
So we had a developer who joined our team about 2-3 months ago, and the first thing he did was he jumped in and he basically implemented this process called NVS or envious because we're envious. And NVS stands for normalize, validate, and sanitize. So basically, we go through a feed as we get it. We basically convert it into a standardized format that we understand. you know, there's like five or six different formats of RSS, and we can run a single format, and then we validate.
What is the format you actually...
We've actually, internally, we standardize on RSS 2.0 format, basically.
Okay.
But, you know, most people don't really have to know or worry about that fact. It's just what we particularly, the pick one we chose. And then we validate. So, for example, if an item is supposed to be an integer, we make sure it's an integer. If it's supposed to be a URL, we make sure it's a URL. If it's not, we throw it out because, you know, bad feed.
Yep.
And then we sanitize, which is we go through feeds that are supposed to contain HTML, and we have a very complicated HTML parsing that goes through and removes every bad or even just unknown HTML tag. It leaves all the formatting in place so you can do your bold and your italics and all that kind of stuff in your description, but we get rid of all script tags, and we basically make sure that the content that ends up in your browser or in your application, which consumes it through the RSS platform, is completely secure from any of this the bad stuff. And that's part of what... You know,
now, how do we know it's really secure? I mean, the team here hasn't always had the best reputation on security, right? Out there.
So we learned from that.
We
learned from that. I know on the dev team, now making an RSS feed list secure, making the download path, making it normalized, making it secure, using somebody, if we, for example, said no malformed feeds, we're not writing our own XML parser. We're not going to go there. We've got one. We've got a pretty secure one. Another team does. And it's gone through. It's working code. It's stood the test of time. We're going to use it, and we're not going to accept other people's feeds. We've got a lot of what he was describing about NVS is the same. Throw out things that we don't recognize. At the same time, we have an accept list of things we do.
Yeah.
We do our whole TMA process. We've got the whole security development lifecycle around what we've been doing. We've got tons and tons of long TMA sessions where we brainstorm around how to do it. We've done a lot
TMA.
Of...
Just with the TMA is threat model analysis, and you know, I hear your point, Robert.
Yeah.
Right, it's like if there's a team that understands that every line of code and every piece of functionality is attack surface area, right? We get it at this point. We get it because it's not like there's just one person. It's not like just Venkat carries the security pager. We all rotate through. We all carry it. We've all sat there in the room.
What does
the
security pager look like, by the way?
Oh, it's not on me right now.
No, I remember, you know, one of the weekends I was carrying it, it went off. And, you know, I had the great big book, and I had to go through, and I, you know, got to call everybody up on a weekend around, you know, what happens when a vulnerability comes in.
Yeah.
So we all understand what attack surface area means. And if you look at the work that's going on, as John leaves, and we understand that, look, this RSS stuff, for a bunch of end users, it's going to be, wow, all this cool stuff works, and I can browse better and different, and there's all this great stuff I couldn't do before.
Yeah.
For developers, there's going to be a bunch of new scenarios where they go, wow, it's really easy for me to go and take an RSS feed and integrate it into my application. And that's going to be great. Then there are going to be a bunch of people who wear very dark hats, right, and, you know, inhabit the night, and are going to go through and try to say, hey, that's attack surface area. What can I go break?
Yeah.
And... You know, it's fair. That's what those people do. It's what they like doing.
Tell me a little bit about some of the innovations you guys have come up with around security. Because you guys really are the first line of defense on Windows, right? You're the first thing. You're the first bit of code that a bad page would hit. Or
in some ways, we're the most internet facing thing.
Yeah.
Right. And of course, now as soon as anybody sees that video, I'll get email from 12 people at Microsoft saying, "I work on the firewall. Let me tell you what internet facing means." Right. But if I think about the innovations we've done, you know, I'm going to defer to Chris. I mean, ActiveX opt-in is huge. Low rights. Protect mode. Sorry, protect mode is huge. I'm gonna turn to Chris.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I think with the NVS approach too is the idea that we need to restrict and constrain the surface area as much as possible, as much as appropriate, right? I mean, like, you still need some HTML formatting tags, for example, but you probably don't need ActiveX controls in an RSS feed, right? So we constrain the surface area. We do the same thing with ActiveX opt-in, where say, you know what, like, you don't necessarily need every single control that might already be pre-installed on a machine to be exposed to a web page. Like, you need ones that we know are good, ones that we know are used. Other than that, you might want to ask the user before you just kind of fire it up and use it. So,
yeah. Is there any way to guarantee that a team like yours can guarantee you've solved security forever and ever?
Oh, no way. No way. Anyone who sits there and goes, oh, we're all done, it's totally secure, I think that's the most arrogant thing anybody could ever do.
Absolutely.
And basically because the state of the art keeps changing.
Yeah.
Right? The folks, like, there's just as much innovation going on in application development and user experiences and web services and security. Like, basically, there are crashes. There's this whole class of application crash that 12 months ago would be classified as, yep, that's a robustness and reliability issue. It's unfortunate that the application crashes under these circumstances. Next. And now, there are a bunch of crashes that aren't just, that are now exploitable. That literally techniques have come up in the last 3 or 4 months that say, oh, if I know how to crash an application in this way, I can exploit it.
He didn't take that.
And yeah, this guy is just not really reading into it. And I'm not going to worry about this. Who would have mind, but he keeps calling collect. We're the IE team, right? It's not like we got the money. No, seriously, there's all this innovation going on in security, and there are crashes that 6 months ago were just, it's a crash. Yeah. That after, you know, there's some interesting talk at Hack in the Box or at Black Hat, and they go through and they say, wow, you know, now we can actually exploit that. Yeah. So security is this, you know, ongoing thing where it doesn't matter what you wrote yesterday because there are new ways to exploit. I mean, everybody talks about buffer overflows, and then turns out there's a thing called integer overflows, and then it turns out
heap overruns.
You've been on the receiving end of so many new automated tools that we run our code through over and over and over. You should talk about that.
So there was the stack overrun era where you said there's unknown way that you can overflow your stack and get malicious code to run. And the past few months we've seen a whole range of these where even if your data overflows the heap, which is a lot harder to exploit, we've seen a lot more demonstrated proof of concepts that you can make it happen. So, as Dean said, the tools have definitely been improving on the exploiting end. And
for a layman, why do these bugs get written? Is it that hard to notice when you're doing a buffer overrun or a heap overrun? And two, why aren't they easily findable? You know. Because I've seen the Michael Howard presentation, but a lot of people at home haven't, where he put like 8 lines of code up on the screen and said, find me the buffer overline. And these are experienced developers who have been through the training, and they can't find it, right? Give me a little sense of what it's like to work on source code and what kind of how hard it is sometimes to see these things.
So for one thing, you know, for new code that's written, Bruce said there's a software life cycle that we go through to make sure that new code definitely avoids all the pitfalls we know and that have been exposed to. But there's also a lot of legacy code that we work with that we are constantly upgrading, but there are still areas of code that we have to bring up to par. We've been doing work with the prefix and the prefast teams. They've been bringing up tools that will help us find these automatically. But you know, it's an ongoing process, and as they get better, our code gets more bulletproof.
Yeah.
There's a lot of complexity in the code.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very big product. It's a lot of legacy code, a lot of new code, a lot of tools run on top of it.
Tell
us about bugs. You know, you call a function, which calls a function, which calls a function, which calls a function, and the contract has to be maintained all along. That's what prefast and various markup technologies and tools help us ensure that those contracts about buffer sizes, about heap allocation rules, there's lots of it's easy to allocate one type of memory and then 15 function calls later delete it with the wrong operator.
So
tools help enforce those contracts.
It's really easy to make those mistakes. I mean, the classic description of the C programming language from, you know, when I took the first class in college was, C is a super powerful language that gives you more than enough rope to hang yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, back in the day, a whole like 5 years ago, or 6 years ago, or 7 years ago, when security wasn't the thing that it is today, it was very easy for developers to make certain classes of mistakes because nobody thought about them as mistakes.
Yeah.
This SDL, the secure development lifecycle process we go through for all the new code, between that and the automated tools that we have and the set of code reviews and having every developer think like an attacker, all of that tries to keep us out of the scenario that Bruce described, where you go through and say, hey, I've allocated some memory, now it's 15 calls later. Oh,
yeah.
What was that?
And you guys have really been trying to learn from the hackers themselves. The Blue Hat program, we just put up the videos yesterday.
Yeah, we've...
And you had a at the...
Windows.
Beta 1 launch party, I met a 16-year-old who's on your team.
Yep.
Who
we filled out all the paperwork. He was legal to work.
He was legal. but he was found by your team because he found security exploits, right?
Yeah. Oh, the things that there are a lot of people out there working on vulnerabilities, and the best thing that we can do is go and engage them. And what we find is that the more we engage them, they understand what we're doing and how we ended up with the code that we did. And it turns out to be a pleasant conversation. It's amazing how non-adversarial it is. Yeah. And I'm sure that some people are sitting there imagining, like when Sean described going down to Mozilla Foundation Corporation.
Yeah.
Which one did you visit, the foundation or the corporation?
The corporation. Where's the corporation on the foundation?
Okay. I'm pretty sure it's the
corporation. You met with Mitchell Baker then?
We met with Chris Beard and John Lilly.
Great.
We're VPs of something like that.
Okay.
That's great. Anyway, the whole point is that it's an amazingly non-adversarial relationship.
Yeah.
That when you get into these conversations, you say, well, we tried this, and we say, well, did you try this? And we end up collaborating and having a lot of really good work around, well, what's the essence of this vulnerability? And there's this instance, but then there's a whole class of things. And, security is, it's amazing how important security has become across the user experience as well as the platform.
Yeah.
As well as in the new parts that, as we take browsing forward, things like RSS, and even like the oldest legacy part of IE, which is the networking stack.
Yes.
It's kind of hard to browse the internet without a networking stack. And these guys described all the legacy code. I'll use my other favorite examples of compat for the surface area, scriptlets. There's a technology called scriptlets. And we thought, attack surface area reduction, we'll get rid of that. And boom.
Don't forget the backstory. Like, scriptlets was something we introduced in IE4. And replaced completely, pretty much, with capabilities of behaviors in IE5. So, this is very old technology for us. And
there we are going, okay, we can cut down the attack surface area.
Yeah.
Right? That's a great way to make users more secure. And then the human resources generalist who works with our team goes and installs a drop of IE7 because she has to work with us and she wants to try out the product. And boom, one of her corporate line of business tools doesn't work because it was written back in the day and they never updated it. And we're like, wow, okay, so it's good for that to be off on every machine in the internet except for the 12 that actually need it.
Yeah.
And you go through and you look at security. That way you can look at a bunch of other things. Deployment issues. It used to be that people wrote the software and then it was somebody else's problem to go get it deployed. And I actually couldn't get somebody to come in. He's kind of on a different sleep schedule than the rest of us, who really thinks about IT pros and deployment issues.
Yeah.
And we've just got this list of things that you have to nail when you ship a world-class browser. And hey, security is right up there. Then there's experience and fit and finish. And then there's power for developers beyond the security. And everything that's represented across this room.
Yeah. Back to the cool stuff.
Well, security stuff is what we ship this for.
Yeah. That's... Well, security is cool for me because the less I have to go and fix my mom or my
brother-in-law. Not getting mugged is really cool, right? Not getting phished is really cool. Not crashing is really cool. Really powerful websites are really cool. All that whole Ajax Web 2.0 thing.
Yeah.
And then
there different in IE7 on XP versus Windows Vista? By the way.
IE7 on Windows Vista is a lot better for a couple of reasons, for what it's worth. There's just some underlying technology in Windows Vista that that enables some functionality we couldn't do on XP.
Yeah.
Top of that list for me is Protect Mode. And I think we either did a video or we're about to do a video about Protect Mode.
Yeah.
Parental controls. I'm just making this easy for Robert to edit out in case I'm not supposed to say any of these things. Parental controls is good.
You should hold up the cue cards now.
There's security, there's reliability, there's IT pro.
There's an all-new networking stack underneath.
There's an all-new audio stack. There's a networking stack. There's a bunch of good stuff on Vista around the browsing experience that it's pretty.
But I just interviewed the audio team yesterday, and they showed me a video playing on a Windows XP machine and a video playing on a Windows XP and Windows Vista machine.
Right.
Same exact hardware.
Yeah.
Only difference was the OS, and they turned up the stress on the CPU.
Yeah.
And the Windows Vista machine didn't stutter and played perfectly.
Yeah.
And the XP machine was stuttering, and in some cases would actually stop playing altogether.
Yeah.
And so, it might not be your team, right?
You nailed it. The whole subsystem.
The experience of being on the internet is going to be better on Windows Vista, even though your code is not any different.
Look, I think about, people talk about display, and people talk about how fast is display pages and what does the display look like. And a lot of the issues that we track down in IE, I talked to Chris Wilson around, hey, why does this page display this way? Why are we having this problem? And he goes, hey, display driver. Beyond my control. And then I think about all the work that went into making the whole path, like here's the pixel on the screen, and then here's what drew the pixel, and then here's the cable that goes into the machine, and the video card, and the driver. That whole path is so much more robust now.
Yeah.
In Windows Vista.
What, since you didn't get much chance to explain really what's cool about RSS, why do you guys care so much about RSS? Why invest all that time to build a
platform? I have such confidence in Sean's answer that I'm going to run to my next meeting.
You have a meeting to get. Thanks, Dean.
See you.
We thought IE was too easy to spell, so you only go with one thing that's one letter longer.
Okay.
That's his confidence in my answer. So why RSS? Well, RSS introduces sort of a different paradigm for how to browse the web. We did a whole
video, and we'll
video on this back in June. So I
has anything changed since we did that video?
We've actually shipped everything that we said we were going to. For example, this is the first XP release that has support for the simple list extensions that we announced back in June, which let people basically support lists like playlists or wish lists or different kinds of things like that.
Do you have any demos that people can try out?
Sure,
there
are definitely.
Beta 2, I'm sorry.
As soon as we have this out there, we'll
the beta 2 preview.
We'll have lots of stuff on our blog, and we'll point to lots of samples for people to try out. I could read out the URL for you, but that probably wouldn't be
much
fun.
We'll just link to it.
Yeah, just link to it. And then the basic idea behind RSS is that you can subscribe to content, right? And you get notified when your content is updated. And one of the approaches that we've taken in IE is we make it feel a little bit like a web page. You know, so if you're accustomed to browsing and you use the web, then subscribing to RSS feels like a web page, except this web page tells you when it's updated, and you can go to it and it says, okay, this particular item has been updated. So you don't have to go to the blog that there's, okay, you know, did I read this one? Oh, did he change a typo? He changed this entire tone of this particular post down here. You don't know any of that unless you read through every line on the blog, and then RSS, of course, tells you this.
Is it like favorites on steroids?
That's exactly the way you should think about it. It's like favorites on steroids. Though steroids are illegal, kids. Don't.
Yeah. we're all trying to. Will this video get aired? That's the question for my life.
I don't think Venkat or I have gotten Margaret to shake her head.
Yeah. Well, what's wrong with you guys?
Robert, can I say what I think is the coolest feature?
Go ahead.
Okay. So after being at the Consumer Electronics Show and showing this product to literally hundreds, probably even thousands of people, the feature that they like the best that these guys haven't spoken to that I actually think will help developers is printing. We've made some huge advances in printing, and now people's sites will actually print, which I think is very cool. People were
just
really
by default,
excited.
Print.
Yeah, by
right.
default.
You just click the print button, and it just works.
Yeah.
Looks
you don't have to play around
you
with
don't
it.
Have to,
none of that,
print out
none of that. Print out your stuff. Go to a meeting, get out your something, and find out the right half inch is cut off on every page.
Can't wait.
Seriously, that was a feature everybody was excited over, and the fact that you guys can adjust the margins and change the print space, and you can select some of the text and not print graphics you don't need or logos you don't need and not waste toner cartridge or paper. It's very, very cool. People were really excited.
I can't wait, because I print out a lot of stuff.
The Venkat's your turn to make more.
please, no, don't. It's not necessary.
What are the five things that you want people to try out when they get this build?
All right, everybody gets one.
Everybody gets one?
Yes.
Well, they're going to be trying out all my features, because I own the whole UX.
Tabs, right?
Well, they'll be using tabs. I still love Quick Tabs. Quick Tabs, we're going to show in beta 1.
Awesome.
Quick Tabs is still awesome. They should check only one.
Yeah. I'll come back to tabs because I want to know the power user tips. So.
What do I want people to try out? I really want web developers to try out our improvements in our standards platform, right? And
okay.
The work that we've done in CSS, I think it's great work. It's a lot different from what we shipped in IE6. I mean, tremendously different. And I want to make sure that that's what they want.
How much work is still left to do after IE7?
How much work is still left to do?
I mean, because obviously the standards people are probably going to look at this and say it's not done yet. So
I don't think there's an end to that, really. I mean, standards are always changing. The landscape's always changing. That's kind of like saying, when are we really done with RSS, right? When are we done with the user experience? I think new stuff comes up.
Yeah. How happy are Jeffrey Zeldman or Molly Hulschlag going to be?
I think they're going to be pretty happy with what we've gotten done. Okay. And like there's tons more to do. I'm not going to deny that, but we've done some really great work. We've really tried to focus on what is most important for web developers and designers out there, and prioritize based on that. So.
Cool.
Go put your feeds through IE and make sure that it works. This is the release where, you know, we've done everything we planned to do. Like, even up to the December release, there are still some things we need to do. There's still some cleanup stuff. So you need to. We have OPML import. We had to and we test on your OPML feed. So
Excellent. Everybody's
OPML feed will work because Robert's OPML.
So you
feed
can at least deal with 843 OPML.
At least deal with 843. So and we stress test it so we can deal with many more than that.
Excellent.
But, you know, support all your feeds.
A lot of aggregators can't, actually. That's one of my first tests, is that can it import the feeds in a normal, you know, range of time without waiting 20 hours? And a lot of them can't deal with that many feeds. So.
Well, ours can.
Excellent.
We made sure that yours works. you're a good stress case, Robert. Thanks.
Somebody called me an edge case, actually.
Yeah, you are an edge case, but a good edge.
My mom is only going to have 20 feeds, all right? So if it deals with 840, you're set for most people, right?
So
do you have OPML export, by the way?
We have export, too.
You have import and export.
Import. Oh, yeah.
That's killer, because that means you guys aren't locking in users, so you can go to another aggregator if you don't
even
like it.
Even better, we actually have an entire platform with APIs, so that an aggregator, like, for example, we announced a little while back, Outlook 12 is supporting RSS as well. And the way they do it is they actually register with the platform so that we tell them every time somebody subscribes to a feed and it gets added to the feed list, we send them an event. And any application can be, this isn't, you know, something we specifically done for Outlook 12, any application can register for these events, and we update them, and then they can update their list as well. So it's not just OPML, it's like, you know, a complete API set that allows application developers to get access to content. Because we 100% believe this data belongs to the user. The user gets to consume the feeds wherever they want to consume the feeds.
Yeah.
They get the content wherever they want.
Well, there's a reason for that, because different aggregators work for different purposes. I find I use three or four different kinds of aggregators.
Yeah.
For instance, I go to live.com, and I like looking at some stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
I like looking at some stuff in Outlook. I like looking at some stuff in IE7. So it's real important to be able to, you know, either import or export or use the APIs as the developers rebuild their apps on top of the platform.
So my thing that every developer needs to go do is try out your feed, make sure your feed works, and then if it doesn't, or you find something you think isn't working right, then let us know. Go to the RSS team blog, which is blogs.msdn.com/RSS team, and we'll have a link to a place where you can basically say, my feed doesn't work, and we can go and look at it and say, well, you know, it's us or it's you, that kind of thing.
Yep.
One of those things. So we really need that feedback. This is the right time to give it to us, so please give it to us.
Cool.
See, the favorite area that I have up on the UX bar is a trust badge, and I'm scared to say go and check it out, because the only way that you trigger it today is to visit something that might be a suspicious phishing site, or if you go to visit an SSL site that has a certificate expired or doesn't match host names. There is one type of certificate that we are working with the industry to put out, which is the Enhanced Validation Certificate. Which is which goes one step beyond what the standard SSL certificates do today. And we're all waiting for those to come out and be in common use. And when you hit those, your whole address bar is going to be flushed green, and your trust badge is going to light up. In the absence of going there, I would say do visit internationalized domain name sites. You'll see the IDN indicator come up right next to the address bar. Drop down, see how you like the experience. Tell us what you like or what you'd like us.
That's cool. How many languages is IE7 going to support?
For the domain names themselves?
Well, for the web pages or for domain names? Yeah.
So for the domain names in the URLs, it's everything that Windows supports languages for. So everything that's in there.
26 languages, right?
It's actually more than that.
It's
more than
it's actually scripts.
26 is actually the number of languages Windows is localized.
36.
36, sorry.
Okay.
Wow, it's even higher.
Yeah.
Higher.
I got to keep up.
Yeah. You guys have a lot of testing work to do, don't you?
Yeah.
Yes, we do. We have
So Windows is localized in 36 languages, but we support, you know, the entire Unicode at least 3 character set, right? And that's many more scripts and languages than we actually localize into. So I think we probably have the most, like Windows itself has the most support for different scripts and languages of any platform out there. So basically, if you speak it, we probably support it.
Well, cool. Well, I have 1 minute of tape left, so thank you very much for introducing us.
I wanted to say people should check out their toolbars. They should check out all call to action for developers to check out all their toolbars, check out their extensions, check out their explorer bars that they may have written, any extensions, things that modify UI, things that...
do you have one power tip for a power user like Chris Barillo?
We'll come some. We'll put some on the blog post.
Okay.
We've got a few. I mean, we still support some of our more hidden features, like search prefixes are still supported in 97. We don't have UX around them. Yeah.
Very cool. But, well, thank you very much for meeting with us, and good luck with the launch. Thank you.